Welcome to the Gateway Podcast, where we get a chance to sit and talk to the outstanding professionals who serve in the 37 Training Wing. I get the privilege to host this podcast and serve as Warhawk Nation's Command Chief. So, without further delay, let's jump into it. As a reminder to all listeners, all topics discussed are unclassified, and the views expressed by our guests and hosts are not necessarily the position of the United States Air Force, the Department of Defense, or any government agency. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Warhawk Cop Podcast. I'm Carlos Damian, the Chief Master Sergeant, or the Command Chief Master Sergeant of the 37 Training Wing for a few more months here. As my replacement has just been named, his name is Chief Master Sergeant Caleb Vaden, coming over there from Maxwell Air Force Base. Absolutely phenomenal human being. I've met him a couple times. The wing will be in better hands than mine, and much taller. I'll add to that too, because he's super tall, just like the current boss, Colonel Cooper. And if you listen to the podcast, you've heard Colonel Cooper on here. And we'll probably do another podcast, but you can't hear his height. But both of them are very tall, so I think that they're going to get along great. I have two outstanding individuals that we were looking for folks to come and volunteer to be on the podcast. I sent a wide net out there, and we have the 637 training group by way of Defense Language Institute, English as a Second Language. We have two professors in here that are far smarter than me, or far better looking. You can't see them on this podcast, but I'll tell you, they're great, handsome individuals. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to them to introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Mindy Foster, and just say a little bit about myself. Yeah. I grew up just a little north of San Antonio in San Marcos, Texas. So I grew up there and stayed local and went to Austin for university, left for a little bit and realized that I absolutely loved Texas and came back to finish my studies here for a little bit. And I taught German for 15 years at Lockhart and then also at San Marcos. I loved it, had an amazing program. I loved my students, absolutely wonderful there. But I wanted to try my hand at a little bit of something else. And so I tried my hand at being a mortgage lender.
Whoa, that's a change
that
up.
That is a huge change. I did that for about 4.5 years. And while I was successful at it, I realized that my true calling really was in education. And a very good friend of mine, a mentor of mine, had always told me, we had been teachers together in San Marcos, and he had always told me, Mindy, you got to go to DLI. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And finally, one day he just said, there's an opening, just apply and ask questions later. And that's what I did. And I haven't looked back yet. I've absolutely loved being an instructor for DLI. It's the best job I've ever had.
Whoa. Better than mortgage lending, huh?
Oh, way better.
Because that sounds riveting. I'm not going to lie.
No.
For all the mortgage lenders, I don't mean to be offensive, but that sounds way better.
It was interesting. I met a lot of people being a mortgage lender. There was some flexibility to it, but at the same time, not a lot of flexibility. You're always on call and such. And but I learned a lot. I learned a lot about leadership and how to problem solve, critical thinking and such.
So Germany.
German, yeah.
How many times have you been in Germany?
Handful, less than 10, more than 9.
Really? Because I have about, I'd say 200 days. I've never been stationed there, but I'm in TDY there so many different times. I love Germany.
Oh my gosh, it's amazing.
Absolutely beautiful.
I even had the opportunity to take students. When I was a teacher, I had organized a study abroad program for my students where I took students to Germany and we traveled around a little bit, but we also stayed with families in Germany and they got to go to school and just open their eyes to another perspective, another
culture,
area, another culture, just another way of life. And it was very rewarding to do that.
I'm going
to
put you on the spot. What's your favorite city?
Berlin, hands down.
Is it?
Oh, I love...
You don't like Cologne?
Oh, well, I lived close to Cologne, right? And it was beautiful. I loved the cathedral. In fact, when I first went to Cologne, I did not know what to expect. I just knew that you really need to go there just to go experience it. But I didn't know about the cathedral. I'm going to be very honest. I was very young and didn't know. And I had taken the subway from the train station up two stops, and then I walked back towards the train station. And when you're walking through these streets, the buildings are right next to the street and you can't see up over the building. So you're just walking, I'm shopping, not a big deal, not a big deal. And I realize, oh, I need to get back to the train station. My train's going to leave. And then all of a sudden I turn this corner and my eyes just see this gigantic, enormous, beautiful Gothic structure, and my eyes just keep going up and up and up and up and up and up until the heavens. And I thought, oh my gosh, how did I not know about this? And it's the famous cathedral.
Yep.
And it's right next to the train station. And I thought, how, I'm such an idiot. How did I not know this was here? And yes, yeah, so I do love that. And I love the history of that and how it survived during World War II.
Absolutely. And
the stories that you can hear about directives that were happening during World War II. But going back to your original question, my favorite city is Berlin, hands down, because of all the history at every single corner.
Yep.
You can walk less than 2 feet and it's another historical place, and different parts of history. It could be from 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 60, 70, 90, 500 years ago. It's not just one specific point of history, but it's multi-generational.
I'll tell you the first thing, this is, I don't know why this is coming to my mind. I'm just going to let it flow. The first time I went to Germany, first time I went to Berlin in particular, I couldn't believe how well-dressed everybody was. I was like, is everyone here a model of some sort of clothing? Clothing
Especially
line,
in Berlin.
Yes. Oh yeah. My goodness! I know that was so. I don't know. It was weird.
A lot of business types, and then you can always spot the American.
You could have spotted me,
even if you try not to. But you can always spot them. But yeah, they definitely like to dress up.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, sir. Over to you for an introduction.
Sure. My name is Philip Burr, originally from a little town in Wisconsin called Sun Prairie, right outside the Capitol. Grew up there, good family. Went to the University of Wisconsin in Madison. Loved it up there, very cold. It was one of the stories I remember from there. We had a warm December, hadn't frozen yet, so there's two lakes there. And it all of a sudden snapped to minus 40. So the lakes are billowing up with steam as it's just such a difference in temperature. And you know that's really cold when the snow, when you it crunches as you walk, crispy crunch.
I don't miss
so, it. So that's cold to me. So then came down to Dallas, went to school in Dallas for a couple of years. So I'm sort of a reluctant teacher. So up in Wisconsin, when I was going to school, I thought about being a teacher, but it didn't work out so well. I taught someplace and boy, that was out in left field. So when I moved down to Dallas, I had the opportunity to start teaching at a school doing a different style, and that worked very well. So then that opportunity took me to Korea for 5 years. So you were talking about you're in Korea.
Yeah. Absolutely.
1 year Seoul, 4 years in Daegu, so 3rd Army headquarters. Shout out to all those people who have served in Korea. I appreciate your sacrifice and the hard work that you've done. And for those who ever served in Korea, that country is growing and improving, and the people there have tremendously benefited from our being there. It's incredible. So shout out to all you. And so then came back here, had the chance to go teach in Washington State. So that's where I came from,
Is
Washington State. So, but how did I find out about DLI from here, from Washington? So my parents had moved from Iowa down to San Antonio. My grandpa had been working in Kelly Air Force Base. He had been a mechanic, and so they had lived here for a number of years. And so my parents moved down here, and my mom got a job here teaching at DLI. Then I started, then not I, but my dad started teaching. So they taught 18 years here. And then my brother, they retired. My brother started, he joined. He's been here now 18 years. And so I've known about DLI for a long time, 30 years, more than 30 years. And I've wanted to teach here. Just life things didn't work out for me to be down here. So my parents would bring people from different countries, their classes, and they'd be at their home. And so, you know, a lot of funny stories that at the house from that. But they would bring these people, and I became very interested in, I want to do this. But anyway, so about a year and a half ago, the door opened up. And so now I'm here coming from Washington State. And I know some people will say, well, how long did it take you to get to Texas? Well, you finally got here. So
by way of a couple different areas.
By way of a lot of different places. So
we all have a lot in common. I'll tell you, because I was stationed in Washington State, both sides of the state.
Both sides.
Yeah. So my father-in-law lives out there. We have a lot of family in Washington State. I'm a huge fan. Minus how much it costs.
Yes.
Out there.
The prices have gone ridiculous.
Yeah. What part of Washington State were you at?
So we lived in near Seattle for a number of years, different places in Seattle area. The last 5-6 years were in Wenatchee, Washington.
Oh, Central Washington. We go there once a year.
Yeah, Apple Capital of the world. Right up the Columbia River is Lake Chelan.
Lake Chelan. That's why. We go there. My father-in-law rents out some areas out there in Campbell's Resort.
Yes.
And we are there. So my wife is going to listen to this podcast. I'm not going to tell her about it. And I hope my father-in-law, Jay Albrecht, part of ABI, no affiliation or endorsement there. But my father-in-law is A of the ABI out there in Seattle, Washington. Wow. So he owns a business out there. And we go to Lake Chelan the last week of July and the first week of August
every year. Good time. It's hot enough.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And the water's up. It's full, and they fill up the lake by July 4th.
Yep.
Yeah, so, and the water is absolutely beautiful and clear and clean. So
and very cold.
Very cold.
Very cold.
Yes.
So we have a lot of that. I lived in Seattle for a few years when I was actually serving in the military. That's where I met my wife.
Wow.
We were in the Seattle area, and then she lived in Ballard or Loyal Heights and loved it out there. I would commute all the way an hour and 15 minutes every day. To go down there, because one, I was in love, and two, I love Seattle. It's a win-win situation out there.
Things to do for love, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's the commute, but you know, like the commute I was the only bozo going down I-5 the opposite way, because everybody goes into Seattle. And then
so you're leaving.
It was the exact opposite.
Perfect traffic pattern for you.
Absolutely. And then I was like, well, these poor saps, as they're going until you get caught in the traffic, because eventually it's going to happen.
Yeah. Was Tacoma. Yeah. Was it all completed at the time?
Oh, it was so bad.
No, they completed it in the last couple of years.
I haven't been.
The traffic smooths so much better.
The S's right there by the Tacoma Dome. Oh, I remember just looking at that. I was like, who would want to live here? Because I came from California.
Wait, you said that construction was completed there. So does that mean that there's hope for San Antonio?
Yes, he's bringing good luck. He's bringing the completion.
Yes. Yeah,
because it was a nightmare. It was a nightmare for years.
What, you don't like the construction here? You spent a lot of time here in San Antonio.
Well, I'm on the commute because I don't live in San Antonio. I live in Seguin. And so it's an hour commute.
Whoa.
Back and forth. And so I feel you on that. And it's all construction.
I was stationed here about from 2003 timeframe to 2006, San Antonio was not this big. Mm-mm. It was insane. Nope. And I lived out in Converse then. Yep. So it was about a 40-minute commute, 45-minute mm-hmm. commute, depending. But you go all the way from Seguin.
Yeah.
But you're still pretty much the San Marcos area.
But thankfully, it's all I-10, right?
Yeah.
So it's just one shot. Like, literally, once I get on I-10, it's right there. I get off on 90 over here and I'm here. Right. So, but it allows me time to listen to different books and,
decompress.
Yeah.
I need to do prepare. That. I need to learn that one.
You don't have to learn that? I loved, that was my favorite part of it. Cause now I live, quite frankly, 38 seconds away.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I timed it. When I time I hit start of my car and then I stop, 38 seconds.
So you live here on base?
You have to live. We have to live on base. Me and the boss have to live. We're called key and essential personnel. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like, and that's a fancy word of saying, hey, guess what, guys? You get to live on base. Have fun. And your family has no say in it. But man, there's worse things going to happen.
38 seconds. It's pretty nice.
Though. 38 seconds. I like numbers. So everyone. So anybody who's listening to this podcast that knows me, they're like, him and his stupid numbers. So that's a great segue to the first question. The next question I'll ask is, what books are you into right now? What are the books, the TV shows, the things that you're doing right now? What's the audio, via reading, Netflix specials? What are you into? What are some of the things that you're into?
So, having come from Korea, I like Korean dramas.
Oh, I was gonna.
There are numbers of them
on these.
Oh my god, you're going, and they're good. The romance ones are really like deep romance,
dramatic.
It's not overly sensual or anything, but it's like really heartfelt. They're amazing. And so, there's just lots of them. So, The Incredible Lawyer Wu or something. There was one of them. It's very dramatic. And the one is the one that we're currently watching. I can't remember something. It's about, somebody that, a very wealthy, South Korean paraglides and gets stuck in a storm and ends up in North Korea. And so she is how to
controversial.
Yes. But they're Korean. It's all in Korean. And so the people of South Korea are watching it like crazy. And the people of North Korea are watching it because they sneak it and they have TVs and they try to make it somewhat real to North Korea. Probably not as bad, but they do make it somewhat real. And it's a push to unify. I think it's like Romeo and Juliet because he's very influential and she is very influential. And so they fall in love and they dance back and forth across the countries.
This is on Netflix?
It's Netflix, yes.
It's not part of your algorithm. You have to watch the Korean.
But if I went to my daughter's, who is into Japanese dramas, Korean dramas, I can guarantee you, right now, she doesn't listen to me. She thinks I'm the most boring person in the entire world because she's 17 and a high school senior. But I'm going to go home and say, have you ever heard of this? And she's going to be eating. I can just picture her face eating like a popcorn or something. Of course. Why? And then with that look on her
face.
Probably
tell you the name.
It's exactly.
Like crossed over to you or something along that line. So, so because they keep crossing the borders back and forth, but
if you could see his reaction, you're like, this is going to be a must watch for me now.
He's very excited about it. You can tell.
I can't. There's a cliffhanger we're at right now, so
don't give it to me. I don't want to know. I don't want to know. Don't even elaborate or allude.
Can tell you.
No foreshadowing.
You'll want to watch every episode if you like true romance. So it's good.
And what about you? Because you got some audio books, I hear.
I guess the nerd part in me, I like the international aspect, right? So I've definitely been reading a lot to learn more about the world at large. So one of the books that I'd read most recently was The Rise of Great Powers. That one was a really good read. And I think it was Jim Sciutto was the author. I'd have to go and double check. So don't quote me on that one. Also like to read a lot from Brené Brown. So her Dare to Lead is one that I have going on right now. And then another one that I'm reading is The Body Keeps the Score. And that one's more of a psychology book. So if you think about it, I've got psychology, communication, international affairs, all three wrapped into one. And then just to put a little bow on top of it, I'm excited because I'm actually reading. I've made it a goal this year to read the Bible this year.
Oh.
Like a little bit each day.
Old, new?
All of it. So, you know, I've never actually sat down and read it and wanted to just make that a goal of going through it piece by piece, trying to study it.
No one part of the inspiration inspired you. Hey, this is the year.
Yeah. Just trying to get closer and trying to learn more and have a better connection.
Okay. Well, that's a great goal to have in 2025.
And then as far as TV shows, because you asked that, and I hardly ever have time to watch TV.
Because you're reading all these books.
Because, well, the books are during the commute, right?
Okay.
But also don't have time because I have kids. And so that, you know, kids in a family, that just takes a lot of time, you know.
Huge amounts of energy.
But I had some downtime over the break. And so my secret indulgence that I allowed myself on Netflix were two different series. One was The Diplomat with Carrie Russell.
Carrie Russell. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So good. And then the...
And so fast. Like, it seems like they're 10-minute episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. When it came to the end, I was like, what? No. I want to know more. And then the really bad indulgence that...
There's no bad.
Emily...
No judgment here.
Emily in Paris. Yes. Thank you, Staff Sergeant. Thank you.
Yeah. We got Sergeant Willard over here giving a thumbs up. She's already red. She's turning extremely red now.
Yeah. It's a bad rom-com, but it's fun. It's fun. And
you need that though. Decompression time to just, I love mindless fiction.
Yeah, you know, you get to see the food they're eating because, you know, that's fun. And you get to see the places they go in Paris and in other international cities. So that's fun.
So if you had to explain, and each of you have to, you could do it. So one person's going to get an advantage here. I mean, I'll let you guys decide who's going to be. For those who don't know what you do, if you had to explain your job in, say, 120, a couple minutes. Yeah, almost at a time. But just if you had to explain your job to the layperson out there, what you do on a, like, not maybe not a day-to-day basis, because it makes it sound relatively monotonous, but what do you, how would you explain your job?
First, I would say it's really hard to get either one of us to explain anything in 120 seconds.
Oh, professors.
Sometimes.
Yes.
I'll say.
What I like to tell people is I teach people, right? Like, I can say I teach English, but in the end, it's that we're working and connecting with people. We're giving them skills to use to be able to do their job better, to be able to connect with our armed forces, and to be building partnerships, to build capabilities and capacities internationally. Ultimately, our job is to, yes, teach American culture and English language, but we are building partnerships in the eyes of security cooperation.
Follow that up.
Sorry, yeah. Bill.
No, that's good. We have students from many different countries that are here. Some are here for short term. Some are here for 6 months or longer. And then they might go on to follow on training to different bases throughout the U.S. I have the opportunity to work with a good curriculum at the GE level, general English level, and we help them to get functioning English so that they can pass an exam so that they can show that they are proficient or good enough in their language to go on to follow-on training so they can understand, speak, communicate past that. For the advanced levels and other levels, they get them to become better teachers, to become officers, to become proficient in their skills, whatever area or field that they have. But the best thing that I think that happens is the language for me is secondary. Mm-hmm. For me, the primary is that we're connecting peoples from mm-hmm. different
yeah.
groups. We have students that are here as future U.S. Army soldiers, and they're coming from different countries, and they get a chance to meet all these people from these different countries. Other, you know, people that normally would never communicate or would have might have very different ideas about each other. They get a chance to meet them as real people, get a chance to talk to them, communicate, laugh with them, mm-hmm. make good relationships with them, get a better understanding, understand how cultures are very different in how they perceive things, how to handle problems, how to deal with those situations. It's a marvelous thing. I love this job. I love this job. Mm-hmm. I would say this is the apex of my teaching career in the sense of opportunity. And it's been incredible being here. So we have a good working staff that the people get along. Mm-hmm. They help each other out. My first year, I was green behind the ears trying to figure out how this works, and many, many people helping out. Here, well, you need this. Oh, I need help with this. Oh, here's how I do it. I make mistakes. Oops. And then they help us out. Their supervisors were there to help us, support us, to be with us. And we felt supported by the leadership that, mm-hmm. You know, Colonel Shen, who's there now, fabulous job. Mm-hmm. Colonel Mark, who's mm-hmm. been, he's over the Echoes. He's doing an amazing job. We are, say it, blessed to be where we are. I just, it's like a secret place.
Yeah.
That's what I feel like too.
It's,
yeah.
I was stationed here the first time. I had no idea DLI was even here. And I worked not even, I could probably throw a rock or take a 9-iron and
yeah.
hit a ball over there.
And we have so many amazing staff members. So So somebody who speaks three languages is trilingual. Somebody who speaks two languages is bilingual. Somebody who speaks one language is American.
American. Yeah. I've heard that. You know where I hear that typically is in...
I apologize. I'm the American. However, we have numbers of staff mm-hmm. that are fluent in numbers of languages. One of the people next to me, oh, yeah, I have three or four languages that he speaks fluently. I'm studying another language, and I've got two or three that I'm reading books in. It's like, what is this? You would never know it by just talking and conversing with these people. I'm sorry to say, but you called us professors. I don't have a doctorate. I just have a master's that's required. And I wouldn't consider myself, you know, as hardly starting the education field compared to where some of these fellow instructors are at. But they don't come across as arrogant. They're very down to earth, but they connect extremely well with the students. It's amazing. So I think.
Yeah, so. I would agree with everything that Phil just said, and that it's a privilege
yeah.
to work here and know that the work that we do here has a global impact.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. And yes, I can say that it's a matter of that the skills that the students are learning help them go on to their follow-on training, help them go on to whatever their next adventure will be. But it's also the idea that I'm in my own small little way helping to make the world a little bit safer for my kids, you know, because the student that I'm teaching today, teaching them English, one day they might be doing a mission somewhere else, maybe in Africa, that has five different countries. None of them speak the same language except for English. And that's the main language that they're all going to be working together in. And that student that I have today, who will eventually be a colonel, is going to use the skills that I'm teaching him to successfully work with the other countries there. And it could be maybe they're managing a natural disaster.
Yep.
You know, maybe it could be something of a self-defense or a multinational operation. We don't know, but I know that what I'm doing today is going to help in the future in some capacity.
So I just went on vacation with quite a few friends, and we went on a cruise this last week. And one of my friends said something. We have two of our friends are getting ready to retire. And, you know, just looking back, reflecting on careers and, you know, the wild ride it's been. And I will say the one thing he said to me, and it reminded me of what you were just saying, is sometimes we look, or I'll paraphrase what he said. He said, sometimes we look for the more grandiose portions, like they're going to be on a mission, they're going to be on something. He said, but when I look at my career, it's the things I'll never know. Maybe it's somebody who's just stranded in their country and now they speak good enough English. Have you ever felt it's helpless? Mm-hmm. I think I've seen many, it happen to many Americans who are American lingual, to your point. you go there and then you just look for somebody and they say, do you need some help? And then somebody you taught, maybe it's on a small plane that you may never know, right, that you know, you're affecting cultures and thought processes in there. And I tell you, have you ever had a flat tire on the side of a Japanese road and you need somebody, and then you're trying to do pointy talky and use your hands. Maybe if I get louder, yeah, and EA at the end of everything or something, it'll help, but it doesn't. But what does help is the English that you teach out there. So sometimes it's the small wins as well that you'll never see.
So my mother, she worked here a long time ago. Anyway, she had one of her students who was from Japan. She sends out Christmas cards. So she's been sending Christmas cards to this guy probably 28 years. Wow. So I have no idea who this person is, but every year. And she said she sent out quite a few, but when they came back, you know, return postage, and they'd be taken off the list because she wouldn't have any means to how to get a hold of them or where. But the one person still sends Christmas cards, and it's good communication still. Yeah.
It is. I've been on the other side of it, you know, and it's sometimes it's the big things and sometimes it's the small things that are in there. And I'll say, yeah, maybe you wouldn't consider yourself professors, but I would say from the outside, looking in, how could you not? You're not just a professor of English as a second language, as English, as English professors, but you're teachers of, you know, like you said, the culture. When I walk into the classrooms and I feel like I just go in there and I hijack all the class time, but I've not once have I ever been there, and I try to make it there at least twice a week or at least once a week when I can, but my goal is always twice a week. And I go in there and I've never had one of the instructors, one of the professors, one of the cadre say, hey, not right now, it's not a good time. Maybe you could kind of read the room, but they're like, hey, come in. Right. And then I ask, what are you learning? And they're like, and they look at you and they're like, I'm learning. And the camaraderie, the tie to the instructor, the professor, the person who's, you know, just pouring into them, you can feel it. Mm-hmm. And they are like, yeah, English is great. Good job, guys. we love the culture. We love this portion, learning from one another. And it is palpable. You can feel it, tangibly feel it, I think, anybody who gets the ability to go over there. Mm-hmm. It's great. So you've been here about a year and a half.
Yeah.
And
we actually started on the same day.
Same date. We're in the same the same entry date.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So what time, when was that exactly? Do you guys know?
September
25th of 23.
Don't give away all the details.
Oh, sorry.
September 25th.
23. So we've been here about 15 months.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's been over a year. And for the longest time, I would tell people, like, don't burst my honeymoon bubble.
Yeah.
And I am still in that honeymoon bubble.
Yeah.
You know, and I can't imagine any other time, any other job that I've ever experienced where 15 months into it, I still had a honeymoon bubble.
Yeah.
You can't say that for mortgage lending, no.
I don't know who you know that was in mortgage lending. I mean, there were some definite good parts about it, but there were some good parts about it.
We were talking about that actually earlier today. Me and Sergeant Willard, we were speaking about people who, you know, kind of come in with negative attitudes all the time. And you just look at them and you're like, oh, I really don't want to be like, I personally try to separate myself from those negative, because then that becomes my negative behavior. And I catch myself saying things like, I don't really believe that. I just feel like I'm mimicking other people's negative responses to things. I think Brene Brown actually hits a lot of that and a lot of her thinking. What is it? My wife loves Brene Brown. What's that? Ooh, I may be messing this thing up, but being truthful to your word, what is that?
Something along those lines.
Yeah, they're like, I get a lot of those. Impeccable.
Kind.
Oh, that's not Brene Brown then, is it? Being impeccable to your word?
It could be. She has a lot of amazing things.
To yourself. I'd be true to yourself. Yeah. I don't know. I'm actually not aware of her.
But that's what I think of like that.
Is to be kind. Yeah. Essentially, even though the truth might hurt, you still need to be kind.
But yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Colonel.
Which is true. Much better than being nice. Nice isn't always so good.
Oh, my goodness. She's laughing.
Oh, she's laughing at
kindness. Because
kindness will tell the truth, where niceness might not.
Right. Are you guys, did Colonel Cooper send you in with that?
No.
No.
Because my boss, we literally just briefed that this morning. That is one of his, we have the wing strategic plan. By way, the boss has a wing strategic plan with way he wants to move the wing in a certain direction. Mm. That is one of his key lessons of, be kind, not nice.
Yeah.
Yes.
Being kind is huge. That is his mantra.
So is he bringing Brene Brown in? Is she the next
speaker? Brene Brown, if you want to come for the price in which we can afford to bring you in, we would love to have you.
She works. I mean, I know that, like, especially in Daredevil, she had mentions of how she had worked with the military. Mm-hmm. And one of the big essays that she had in there that really spoke to me was when people feel overwhelmed, that it's not necessarily a matter of being overwhelmed, like overworked, but it was that they feel lonely. And that spoke to me as being an educator, because what we teach is, yes, we use the language. That's the tool. But what we really are teaching people are connections, those interpersonal relationships. And when you have those interpersonal relationships, then you're less likely to feel lonely, because you have your tribe, you have your connections, and you have your ability to lean on people. And when I was reading Dare to Lead, that's what she had in there. And it was from a colonel from the Air Force. It's like a three-page letter that the colonel had written. Brene Brown, if you want to come.
Colonel Cooper is I had no idea. He doesn't talk like, that's one of the things we talk about books, but then I don't want to give the secrets away, because I'm going to talk about it next time.
Part of your book club.
We have a book club here too. So when we're done here, I will show some of the stuff, a lot of the leadership type books, but we have some really, I just gave Sergeant Willard a bunch of the books, 2 weeks ago? About 2 weeks ago, I was like, here's your homework assignment. Read this one first.
And shout out to the Libby app. Yeah. As part of, working here, you have access to the DoD libraries, and you can download the Libby app, and you don't have to pay for Audible. It's all on the Libby app.
Well, if somebody got it checked out, right? That's the thing.
Yeah, but you can wait.
I want to punch myself every time. I'm like, I'm getting this one right now. And they're like, I was like, I don't know who I have to go on in the cyber world to tell them to check this book back in. But that's the only thing for Libby, because I'm
impatient. Some of them take a long time. But then, a lot of the international affairs ones or the security cooperation ones, I might have to wait a couple of weeks. But for the most part, I'm able to get those fairly quickly, which is nice. Good.
That's why. So I used to belong to Scribd. He has a couple different ones. And we both like to run and listen to listen to books, but we also, there's nothing to me like reading an actual text. I love the feel of books as well, but I also have a Kindle, and that's why I'm gonna lose my front teeth, because every night before as I'm falling asleep, it always hits me in the face. But the best thing I have is sleep apnea now, is it just hits my mask in the face, and then it rolls off and it's like, time for bed. So you talk about goals, and the fact that you're reading the Bible in 2025. Phil, do you have any goals, and you want to elaborate on other goals you might have? Any short, long-term goals that you have here care to share?
I have some short-term goals, is debt-free. Mm-hmm. one of to go on what they call an MTT, which is overseas. So I actually was just recently accepted to go teach overseas. And so it's 6 months and I'll go and teach English in that Middle Eastern country, and it'll be a good experience. I'm very much looking forward to that experience, to get a chance to know their culture, get a chance to see the people and the way they live and how they do things. I know I don't have rosy glasses. It won't be easy, but it'll be a learning experience, you know. I'm looking forward to that, one of those things. I also, to read through the Bible in a year, it's one of the things that I try to do as well. Let's see, I'm trying to think if there's other goals. I have not set other tons of goals that...
That's pretty good though.
Yeah. You know. Weightlifting as well. So to keep physically fit, that's another thing. I want to try to gain some more weight. So try to hit the gym here 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I've never been military, but I appreciate the discipline that they have. So that's one of the things that I also do, is try to lift it 3 days a week. My goal is to get to be able to bench and squat my weight and do all those.
There you go.
As easy as, to make it as easy as possible, and to walk and to run. Running, I'm not as much of a runner anymore, but I definitely want to be able to walk, 5 or 10 miles without too much effort. Doing that in Washington is a great thing to do.
Oh, it's beautiful out there.
Yeah. Another goal is to make sure that my son, who's in college in Michigan, at Hope College, he's studying to be a doctor, that he's taken care of, so that all the finances there are taken care of. So then I have a daughter that's in Central Washington, still in Wenatchee. I want her to finish her high school. So that's one of the goals. You have a senior, you said.
A senior in high school. Last of the five.
Yeah, she's a junior. So this year and next year, they have the school that she goes to. They do a project where they have to stand in front of their peers, and they, for 20 minutes, have to present a thesis of some sort. Then they have to stand in front of an audience as a senior. This is their senior thesis. They stand in front of an audience after presenting this and doing research and doing all those things. Then they defend it in front of the questions of all the student body and adults and other people. So I'm looking forward to seeing her do well on those kind of things. So I'm pretty excited for my kids. So
awesome. Those are great goals. So thank you for sharing those.
Yeah.
Those are, I tell you, there's a book called Power of Moments. I think that's something that I read that actual, I think the exact same exercise that they do, but it's more of a, I think, a trial. If you ever read the book, The Power of Moments, that's something that sticks with them for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
And it's just that one small time, all the work that they put into it, but they really remember them standing in front of their
and that they can
peers.
Accomplish. That's the thing, is that they can finish, they can accomplish, they can do this. So my son, who's up in Michigan, he says that college is significantly easier. It's not easy, but it's significantly easier having the tasks that he's had to work through in high school. So I don't know if high school students are listening, but do the work now. It'll make your college and future easier. So the effort now is worth the relaxing later.
Yeah, I think that's just something too, that I have two kids in college right now. One over here going to school here in Texas, and one in Illinois.
Nice.
And I would say that they probably they can get down on that. I'm hoping my youngest is hearing that too. She's not listening though.
Listen.
What about you? Closing up with these goals.
So I have a tendency to try to overdo everything, and
your top field. He had like 20 goals just now. No.
Well, I'm saying like I like to go.
She's excellent at what she does.
From
I can tell.
Morning to end, always just. Everything in my day is jam-packed. Yes. And I am coming to a point where I want to learn how to rest because I don't know how to do that. And like you mentioned a vacation. I'm like, how do you do this? I don't know. Like, and so I'm really trying to focus on putting, readjusting some things and making sure that I have time with my family and making them a priority and just being present in that moment, you know, meditation and journaling and just making sure that I'm not missing out on those moments. So like Phil has his kids on the other end of the spectrum from me. Mine are younger. I've got a 6 and a 9-year-old and the 6 is spunky. Oh, God bless me. Oh, I love her. She's just like me whenever I was a kid. And I want to make sure that I'm there for her and for the 9-year-old as she's growing up and just all the little moments, you know, the Valentine's Day dance is coming up. Normally I'm like, oh, but I want to be there for that and be there in the moment and not think about other things but them.
Well, I'll tell you, we've been at this for about 55 minutes now. And it goes by that fast. Cause a lot of people I know that when they first come in, they're like, oh, we're going to talk about, I say 30 to 45 minutes. It never lasts. It's never that short.
Sure.
So I'm just
we're also English teachers.
Yeah.
That's verbose sometimes. Oh man.
I like it. I like it. Yeah. Well, I'd like to thank you both for being on the show and sharing your story. I really do appreciate it.
I think we both said it, you know, we love this place and we both feel so privileged and honored to be here. And if we can tell people about DLI and just how much of an amazing place it is and all the good work that all the people there do, whether it's the teachers or the curriculum testing, whether it's the custodians, even in facilities, you know,
Facilities are amazing.
Yeah, they're amazing. And then we also partner with the International Support Squadron and the International Non-Resident Flight. You know, everybody has a job to do and we're all interconnected and we support each other and it's amazing.
They work very hard. And I appreciate the support from leadership here too. Mm-hmm. So,
100%.
Yeah. And they show themselves here, which at DLI, which is like, I know they're very, very, very busy. So anytime that you see leadership in places where there's a lot of work, I mean, where we're doing things, you appreciate how much that they're involved in our, what we're doing. That's huge. So
real quick, I know you want to wrap it up, but just a real quick story on that and talking about the leadership here. So when Phil and I walked in the building, we didn't quite know where to go. And we walk up and we see two people standing at the staircase and the person just automatically asks us like, hey, how can I help you? And we both knew who he was. It was Colonel Cooper. But to know that the wing commander humbly asked us, how can I help you? Just two random people walking into the building shows truly what this place is about, right? He saw us, he heard us, he knew, he made us feel seen. And to me, that's what true leadership is about, is making sure that your people, no matter who they are, whether you know their name or not, making sure that they feel seen and heard. And so we also feel that over at DLI too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you again. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
We're out here. Teammates, thank you for tuning in. For any topics, questions, or guest requests, please shoot me an email or leave a comment below. Thanks for tuning in. As a reminder to all listeners, all topics discussed are unclassified, and the views expressed by our guests and hosts are not necessarily the position of the United States Air Force, the Department of Defense, or any government agency.